Yes, Maharaj.
Okay. Well, the thing I want to talk to you about is cinema. Because Lenin, once he sees cinema, considers the most important art. Mm-hmm. And he immediately combines cinema and ideology. And we see in a particular part of history, cinema, there were many, Hitler's films about, you know, great ideological presentation through cinema. There were Soviet cinema, there were Hollywood cinema. And of course, talking about very recent history of cinema, the latest movie, Life of Pi, it's become a popular, especially in China. Why?
I would say because people, they like to see images that reflect concepts that are in their hearts.
That's a very interesting point. Can you reveal something?
Well, we're always, the heart, we could say in this sense, is the subjective realm, and what we see, objective. And we're forever trying to take what's in the heart out into the objective world. Actually, really, we want to live in the subjective world, but we find ourselves in the objective world. And that's why people, not only the Chinese, but everybody, like to go to movies and immerse themselves in an experience. It's like you're taken away from the objective world for some time and you enter another world. And you're voyeuristically envisioning yourself through the characters there. And I mean, that's in a simple way. That's part of what people do through media. But there may be more profound implications about that also.
Can you bring a little light on that?
Well, it has to do with our ultimate aspiration and also what separates human beings from animals. Right? We're riveted to story. We're hardwired for story. That's why to this day, what's been handed down in time, when we say story, we mean a narrative about who are people, what is our purpose, what is our prospect or our possibility. And different stories speak to that. That's why human beings are storytellers. Animals are not storytellers. Right? Someone will try to say, no, but dogs, they dream about catching, cats, or cats dream about catching mice. That's another thing. Dealing with base necessities, eating, sleeping, sex, defense. Human beings, they're interested in story that speaks to their heart and their identity potential.
Well, it's a very interesting point. So when we look at the religious realm,
yes,
the Bible, Vedas,
right, all stories.
It's the stories, but in modern world,
replaced by different stories.
Right. So what's
And you're talking about movies. So what was popular at one point were Star Wars. Let's go back to that. It's still people, everyone knows what Star Wars is. And we saw, or the media observed, a almost religious-like following of those who were the devotees of it. And what was it about? The Force and the dark side and the good side, these very basic things that human beings deal with, good nature, bad nature. So some people will make the argument that these religious stories that you have in the various scriptures, in time, philosophers tried to translate that into something else, science came along, but still you have filmmakers of the 20th century presenting these basic story models that some people will sometimes attribute to the Greeks, saying there's only 5, 6, 7 stories that you can tell. It's these same stories being reworked in different ways, and people still find them fascinating because it speaks to their inner aspirations.
What is the difference between mundane story, which is very touchy, and divine story, which is like...
Well, that's a good point. And we can say this. If you look at the structure of Vedic literature, Omni, revealed truth, particularly the Puranas, you have three divisions of Puranas that sometimes tell the same story. So you have Puranas in Tamagun for people in the mode of ignorance, Puranas in Rajagun, passion, and Sattvagun. So they tell the same story a little differently with different emphasis points according to the intended audience. Someone will point out, for example, the Nisringadev pastime, Prahlad Nisringadev. In the Rajasic Purana, there'll be elaborate descriptions of fight scenes, armor, those kind of things. If we look to the Bhagavad Purana, which is not merely Sattvagun, but is Nirgun, right? It's described as the Amala Purana. Right? The emphasis is on philosophy. The minimum is placed upon descriptions about battles and things like that, and fights. That's the minimum. And what did we come away with? The maximum is the teachings of Prahlad Maharaj, his prayers to Nisringadev, the prayers of the devatas to Nisringadev. So, and we're told, and what is the Bhagavad Purana? Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanamamalam. This doesn't have any mundane reference point. If you think it does, you're not perceiving it properly. It's not, it doesn't have as a reference point the mode of ignorance, the mode of passion, or even the mode of goodness, really. It's what? Nirgun. That's why Sukadev was selected. No mundane reference point, just a pure medium for expression of higher truth. And what is the purpose of the Bhagavatam? What is the purpose of telling the story of Prahlad Maharaj? That Sanatan Goswami is called the Bhakti Siddhanta Acharya, where Rupa Goswami is the Rasa Acharya. Sanatan Goswami Prabhu, we have to, you know, give extra praise. And he's the Bhakti Siddhanta Acharya. He's going to tell us philosophically what is to be understood. So in his book, Brihad Bhagavatamritam, what we might not perceive the structure of Srimad Bhagavatam. In Brihad Bhagavatamritam, Sanatan Goswami Prabhu, he's telling us what's the position of Prahlad, where is Shiva, where is Brahma, what is Karma Misra Bhakti, what is Jnana Misra Bhakti, what is Shuddha Bhakti. And on this point, we have to say something about Mahadev Shiva because of his greatness and also unique position. That sometimes Guru Maharaj will say there's, you know, Bhogshiv, Tyagshiv, and Bhaktashiv. And I say Shiv because I'm just remembering once I was in this, we were having a preaching party in India, one town called Meerut, another one called Bareilly. And I'd be going by in the rickshaw, keeping different appointments, you know, doing some Harikatha, some collection. And this one Shivite, he was a little enamored seeing some Westerner in, you know, the Vedic dress or the dress of a brahmachari. And I'd be going by in the rickshaw, always had to go in front of him. He was like in front of a banyan tree, right? But with a little platform doing something. But whenever I'd go by, he'd go, Shiv, 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 Shiv. As I go, Shiv, 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 Shiv. So I couldn't tell if he was trying to purify me or he thought my appearance was auspicious.
Well, maybe he just expressed himself in an artistic way. You just said very interesting.
But wait, just to finish that. So we're told, Bhogshiv, Tyagshiv, Bhaktashiv. As Bhogshiv, Maya is his consort. Right? Shiva's not under the influence of Maya. Maya is his consort, right? Who's putting everybody else into illusion. And we're told, similar to the mentality of women sometimes, if she feels she's being neglected by Shiva, she will try and catch his attention in different ways. Right? But she failed to put him into illusion. Right? So sometimes he's known as Dhira, the example of Dhira, meaning sober, undisturbed, not under the influence of the senses. So Guru Maharaj made this point that we just posted. He said, we are all Shiva, atomic Shivas, where I inserted the word wannabes. We want to be like Shiva, meaning we want that Maya will serve us, that Maya will be our consort. And again, Sanatana Goswami Prabhu deals with that in Brihad Bhagavatamritam. So when the jiva is about to leave the material world, he's gone through the eight layers of the, he's in the last layer, he's on his way out of the material world, that Maya comes before him in a very charming form. Beautiful, sweet, seductive, charming. And says, why are you going? And he's thinking, well, you know, suffering and illusion and the world and I'm through with that. And she goes, yes, but that was because you were under my control. But now I'm offering myself to you. You'll be Shiva and I'll be your consort. And Guru Maharaj, he described this as, he said, the last sweet bullet enters the brain. Like, really? I'll be Shiva and you'll be my consort? Yeah. But see, this is a very delicate point, because we'll say that is the aspiration of so-called Shaivites or Shaktas and so on. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur deals with this very nicely in Jiva Dharma, where in one of the discussions, one of the maybe Paramahansa Babaji or someone says, Vaishnava Das, he said, let me understand you properly. You're saying that when the jiva soul is conditioned, a conditioned soul, that Maya is Ma, means mother, like Jai Ma Kali, Ma Durga, right? He said, and you're saying, but when jiva becomes liberated, then he becomes Shiva, and his mother becomes his consort? So that's how Bhaktivinoda Thakur deals with that point. It's almost, I mean, not only, it's mildly humorous. He says, so you're suggesting, when you're a liberated soul, then your mother becomes your wife? So that's that bhog shiv, then tyag shiv. In the interim position, just as, like sometimes people would say to Guru Maharaj, oh well, Shiva, it says Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. It's the best of the Vaishnavas. Guru Maharaj would say, that is for propaganda. He said, if you, his location in the middle position, haven't you read Brihad Bhagavatamritam? Where Brahma, Karma Misra Brahma, when he is asked, he is told, you're Atmabhu. You know, born from the Lord's navel. No mundane mother or father, because before that, Vaman, Indra was being praised, that Vaman's your family member, Vamandev. You know. Anyway, and Brahma's saying, well, actually, I'm so busy managing this world, I don't have time for my mantra and my japa. I'm so busy managing. He said, but Shiva, he lives underneath, we hear in the Bhagavatam, what is that? A banyan tree is 800 miles wide and it's very quiet. And he's there without a stitch. Like Sukadeva, we're told, what was Sukadeva wearing according to the Bhagavatam? What does it say? Digambara. This is the beauty of written by Vedavyasa, saying he was wearing the 10 directions. That's how it says. It doesn't say he was naked. It says, Digambara, he was dressed in all the directions. That's a more beautiful way of saying that. So similarly, Shiva's in that position. So from Brahmaloka, Biroja, to Shiva Loka, but it's still below Vaikuntha Loka. So Tyag Shiv. And when Shiva's praised, as we told there, Narada's praising him, how great he is, and he's saying, no, sometimes I have to act against the Lord. I'm giving these assignments, like as Shankara preaching Mayavad, deluding jivas. It's also mentioned by Guru Maharaj that Shambhu, Shiva, he's the sum total of all jivas. Right? So we hear in Brahma Sangita, Vishnu cannot have any direct contact with Maya. So out of his yoga nidra means half asleep. His glance, just his peripheral vision, glances toward Maya, and the glance personifies as Shambhu. And within him are all jiva souls. And then Shambhu impregnates all the jivas into the womb of Prakriti, who supplies all their different forms. So anyway, that position. But then above that, what about Bhakta Shiva? So when Srila Gurudev made the Sada Shiva, the Shiva temple, was very careful to give it a name, Gangadhar Sada Shiva. Gangadhar, reminding the foot water of Vishnu is taking on his head as worshipable. And Sada Shiva, meaning Bhakta Shiva of the Vaikuntha world. And higher, we know in terms of a, Guru Maharaj will tell us, gods, they have some play in Vrindavan to keep things interesting, Brahma Shiva. But when Shiva wants to really participate in those pastimes, then we have Gopeshwar. Right? But only Shiva has these three positions of Bhogshiv, Tyagshiv, Bhaktashiv. And sometimes we're told also Advaita Acharya, sometimes described as Mahavishnu, sometimes as Shiva. And if we understand the intimate relationship between Mahavishnu and Shiva, that makes sense.
Well, it's a very interesting point of view.
Oh, and just to finish, so Shiva, he deflected the praise of Narada and told, when he said that, you know, I'm so shameless, I wanted to be greater than my Lord. Right? But Sanatana Goswami explains, what does that mean? Who's greater than Krishna? The devotees. So he's saying he wanted to be a devotee, but he made it sound like he was asking for something undesirable. But that Shiva, he says, I rather appreciate Prahlad. And that's why Prahlad occupies that position specifically in the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, the beginning of Shuddha Bhakti. When he says the Nasa Britya Sabai Banik, when the Sringadeva is offering, whatever boon you like, Prahlad, you take. And he's hurt. He said, do you think I worshipped you to get a boon from you? Like a businessman, some business exchange. That's why it's the beginning of Shuddha Bhakti. No anticipation of reward, remuneration, that kind of thing. So Srimad Bhagavatam again. Amala Purana. There's nothing in this Purana that will that has any connection with the modes of nature.
Going back to the original topic of this discussion, there's ways of different styles of art to represent certain concepts. In previous ages, Vedic sages were speaking. Then they start writing. then we'd see that images, the pictures appear on sculpture and frescoes and bas-reliefs.
Yes.
And it seems like now is the age of multimedia and moving pictures, animation, you know, animated comics, advertising. So considering all these new ways to represent different concepts to people and people's ability to connect and reciprocate with them. Mm-hmm. So how would the modern way of represent those concepts be appropriate?
I'm reminded of when some devotees, they wanted to make some deities, Krishna, Balaram, and Subal, and Sridham. So they're asking Srila Guru Maharaj, how should we show Krishna Balaram? We have some idea, famous temple. But how should we show Subal and Sridham? And Guru Maharaj said, they should be shown ready to fulfill the inner desire of Krishna. And they looked at themselves like, all right, but how should they be? What should their posture be? He said, they should be shown ready to fulfill the inner desire of Krishna. And then finally, when they pressed about, but how, what would be their posture? And Guru Maharaj said, that an artist can decide. So when we see pictures or images of divine forms, we're warned against thinking that they're accurate representations of divine form. What we're getting is an artist's imagination. What is that artist's devotional qualification? Is unknown. Right? So, for example, Saraswati Thakur, when it came to chanting Krishna Nam, he did not advise one, look at a picture of Krishna and chant Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Many devotees think they should do that. They think, oh, that'll be good. I'm taking Krishna Nam and looking at a picture of Krishna or Radha and Krishna. Or that'll be helpful. That'll remind me of the divine form of Krishna. He told the opposite of that. He said, the senses are like vultures, and they're, in other words, we're subjective agents. This is the objective world. He said, they're going to turn the image of Krishna into vulture food. What they want, what is their idea? They're looking for some objective representation of subjective reality. And it's the opposite of that. That's why we'll notice when we observe deities, we go to India and they'll say, this is a self-manifested deity. Say, we look at Radha Raman. We'll say, oh, anatomically, Radha Raman is an exaggeration. A very thin, very broad shoulders. But everyone will say, such a beautiful deity, small and very powerful. Right? But not anatomically correct to the extreme. The hands, the form. As we told the other day, we don't portray gods with muscles. Human beings have muscles, which are a result of flesh and bone. Gods do not have muscles. They don't need them. It's not a product of subtle forms. Muscularity, that's a fleshy consideration. So when it comes to how these, you know, forms appear, will manifest, it's according to divine will. Even from an artistic point of view, we visited the Vatican, and there they have the Pietà of Michelangelo. Mary, after Christ has been taken down from the cross, she's holding Christ on her lap. So people, it's considered a masterwork, masterpiece. But an analysis, from an analytical point of view, they've measured Mary is much larger than Jesus. If you get out a tape measure and measure her, like very much larger than him, which is, from an objective point of view, not true. But when this is put together, it's conveying some sort of subjective reality that everyone finds overwhelming. And the objective flaws, if you want to call them, are not a factor to the subjective aspect coming through. So when we deal with any particular art form, we have to be very careful about that, because people will think, as they asked Srila Prabhupada when he had an art department, they'd say, Srila Prabhupada, does Krishna really look like this? And once he said, you know, not exactly, but you'll recognize him when you see him. So he, seeing that the people had no idea what is the form of Krishna and all of these things, started an art department to do artistic representations of that. We just have to remember, that's what it is. It's an artist's conception.
Well, I found in your explanation very deep meaning, but from another point, it looks like a little bit of contradiction of what most people believe about divinity, because they believe that through art you can achieve some kind of a divine form, and some people say, you know, specifically in Vedic culture, that divine form can be achieved through particular sound, vibration. So can you really explain how divinity descends and how
yes.
it takes different shapes and forms?
Yes, so Guru Maharaj gives us a principle, a Hegelian principle. Reality exists for itself and by itself. And this is congruous with what's expressed in the Upanishads, where it says, Tasyesha Atma Vivinute Tena Labhyas Tanum Swam. He will reveal himself according to his own necessity. And that's the point I was making, why the deity of Radha Raman, if we say, well, if this is a self-manifesting deity, but it's not, from external point of view, 100% anatomically correct, how is that possible? Then it means, it indicates the sweet will of Krishna. He decided to appear that way, in that particular form, as we see in the Jagannath deity. Someone made a murti of Srila Guru Maharaj after his disappearance, and the devotees were not happy with the artist's representation. And they looked to Srila Gurudev for some adjustment. And Gurudev, with his profound humor and as a means of pointing to an ontological truth, he said, if Jagannath is Krishna, then this deity is Guru Maharaj.
Well, steal.
All right, so but my point is, so when you're dealing with subjective expression in the objective world, we will say, as a general rule, it has to be descending from up to down, not the inverse, that we're trying to go from down to up. We're trying to reconfigure matter or media in a particular way to generate spiritual substance. That's the opposite, right? And that will generally come under the heading of what we call Prakriti Sahajism or imitationism. Thinking we can reconfigure matter to generate something spiritual. The inverse, or what we strive for, is descending, that some divine inspiration will come down and move, manipulate the media. Just as Kaviraj Goswami is saying, I can't see and I'm arthritic. He's in his 90s. He's saying, but some divine power has come down and is moving my hand, and miraculously I'm writing this Chaitanya Charitamritam. Right? So that this is at the basis of anything that's pure and substantial, that something higher is descending.
What I can say, possible, very much possible, that the same conversation going on right now in between some art group, where they say that there are true art which is descending.
Right.
And they're
the artist is an instrument for expression.
Right. And most of the popular art which people are taking wrongly, it's imitation, or maybe good imitation or bad imitation of a true descending process. So we can say an art world is always has a fight, internal fight, which is going on.
Yes.
The guys who can come up with original stuff and people who's trying to...
Well, and there was a movement called Art for Art's Sake. Right? And whenever it was, 19th century or whatever. And as we've mentioned, the picture of Dorian Gray, the introduction, Oscar Wilde makes many observations about art. And he concludes with this statement, all art is quite useless. And naturally, being a wit, some people, they thought, they took it at face that he's saying it's of no value. That's not what he was saying. When he said it's quite useless, it was a clever way of saying it exists for itself and by itself. If it exists to fulfill some purpose, then that's something less than art. And that's why Guru Maharaj invokes Hegel. If reality exists to fulfill the purpose of another, then it's not for itself and by itself. So we're back to this means of revelation, of divine expression, of Krishna, you know, nimitta matra bhavasavya sachin, Arjuna, you can be an instrument for the expression of my divine will. That, so it's whether you're Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, or you're an artist in front of a canvas, or a devotee giving a lecture. The aspiring servitor is offering themselves as an instrument to be used for divine expression.
See, but some people may say,
yeah,
acting in a particular frame of religion or a particular frame of philosophical school, it's not entirely the same as to be a pure artist where you have no bridges, you have no limit, you just surrender yourself to some kind of a divine flow, and that will let you represent itself. So how would you apply that?
Well, ultimately we have to examine, we can say anything.
Well, I mean some would, many people would say.
They can say, I'm saying,
art
so.
Art is a slave of religion.
Well,
so now where the artists separate from religion, they can be more true, sincere and honest. Being
and produce lower quality art.
Well,
So to this day, they can't produce something that matches one of these masters under the influence of theism. That's another subject. But what I'm saying, we can say anything, but whether it's true or not is another thing. So what is that? Instead of dealing in nebulous terms about being moved by the spirit and expressing something, right? Why is one artwork selling for 100 million euros and the other one for 100, right? So those who are, subjective experts, they're determining value and they have some criteria for doing that. So in a similar way, we have to have some idea about what is that reality, what is the nature of that or reality who's going to express himself through a particular agent. Is the ultimate reality something impersonal, abstract? Is it personal? Is it multidimensional? Can it be impersonal, localized, and superpersonal? All these things will have to be considered. Otherwise, if we just say, well, it's some divine, abstract thing that's is moving me to express these things, how can that be verified?
Well, my question is very similar to almost Vedic approach as a spontaneous divine revelation, as artistic approach. as true, pure art, as spontaneous divine revelation. So.
And revealing what? That's the point. It all sounds good. Then what is revealed? What is the substance of what is revealed?
Well, in both ways, we can say.
That's why in Vedic culture, let's just put this out there also. Visual arts are in the lower section of society done by artisans and craftsmen. The higher section of society, Brahmins, who are dealing with Shabda Brahma, spiritual sound, they're not visual. They don't do visual representations. The artist, the actor, all of those positions in Vedic culture are in the lower section of society.
Why?
Well, I think it's very obvious because it's their external. For the most part.
So that means being able to appreciate art internally, you have to achieve certain qualities and qualifications. What would that be?
To appreciate art?
To appreciate divinity, art. We can also say that our, you know, writers, poets, art lovers, they don't have, like, even the great artist, it doesn't always mean that they paint their great paintings. Some things, they have just external feeling, internal feelings, experience.
We'll have to understand something about the nature of reality. Is reality personal or impersonal? Or is it both? We'll have to understand these things, otherwise you have nothing to measure it against. If you don't understand the nature of the absolute, then the idea that all things are relative, there's no way of measuring what is superior, inferior, progressive, regressive. So you have to come to the point of becoming acquainted with the absolute. That's why the Bhagavatam begins with this concept saying, yes, there's only one thing. There's actually only one thing, just like Einstein thought. He told his mistress, said, you ought to keep a notebook for all your different ideas. And he said, I don't need a notebook, I only have one idea. And I keep thinking about this one idea over and over. He's looking for this one thing, just like the Upanishads say, try to know that one thing, upon knowing which, everything is known. Right? That's what he was trying to do. And that's what men of his ilk are trying to do. They're trying to know that one thing, upon knowing which, everything can be known. So in that sense, it's actually a theistic pursuit by Upanishadic standards. And so the Bhagavatam begins by saying, yes, Advaya again, there's only one thing to be known. But that one substance can be understood in three aspects. Brahman, it has a seemingly impersonal, abstract side to it that's all accommodating. And Paramatma, it has a localized, all-permeating aspect that's smaller than the smallest within everything. But its ultimate expression is Bhagavan, personality. And not just a male personality, but male, the predominating moiety, the supreme male, predominated moiety, the supreme female, and they have loving exchange. This is inconceivable by the most advanced brains of our time. At best, they can conceive of God as like, well, everything there is. If they're pushed, they'll come up with something like that. Basically something that's abstract or tending towards impersonalism. But the idea that God could be a person is beyond their mental, intellectual capacity. And that's dealt with in the same beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Muhyanti yatsurayaha. The thing, not only are the finest human minds unable to digest us. The gods are bewildered.
Well,
Brahma, who we spoke of before, bewildered. Shiva, bewildered. When we sing that Arati song that has the line Shambhu Agochar, you know, the Saraswat Arati, when I'd walk around the tank in Calcutta, the pond in front of the mat, you may know that man, he lived in this one house and he's always inviting devotees over. And he's always inviting me to come, but I never went. But one night he stopped coming and we met each other on the footpath and I said, oh, why are you not coming? He goes, I heard your Arati song. I'm saying, yes. It says, Shambhu Agochar. And saying, even Shambhu Shiva cannot conceive this. It's beyond. He said, I cannot accept that.
I want to ask you one interesting question, which is, I've heard from Srila Gurumar.
So just to cap that, Gurumar is saying in his book, Jiva Jaya Brakshitam Shuka Shiva Brahma Samanitam. Brahma, Shiva, Sukha, Uddhava, they're aspiring for a drop of this.
And?
But what were you going to say?
Well, I mean, just, I'd like to hear your, I was very touched by the idea that God has his own civilization in this way, because we always talk about human civilization, Roman civilization, modern civilization.
Right.
I've heard that terminology about God's civilization.
Well, Guru Maharaj is talking about Mahaprabhu's civilization.
Right, so I'd like to hear your representation of this, like revelation of this term.
Well, Kaviraj Goswami says, Krishnara Jateka Kela Saratam Nara Lila Nara Bapu Tahara Swarup Gopa Vesh Venukar Navakishor Natabar Nara Lila, human-like pastimes, Nara Lila, Nara Lila, these are just perfect for what he wants to do. And because a Prakriti Lila means it looks like it's mundane, but it's not. So human beings apparently have limitations, right? Sometimes we'll hear things, that, you know, they'll say, a flea can jump 1,000 times his height. If a man could jump 1,000 times his height, you'd fill a stadium of people like, all right, he's going to do it. You know, it would be on the internet. He's now going to jump 1,000 times his height. That means he's going to jump 6,000 feet. Or what is it? 2,000 meters. Right? Or they'll say, this type of limb, they can lift 30 times their weight. If a human being could lift 30 times his weight, he would be forbidden to enter the Olympics. They would say, no, the guy has some kind of superhuman power. No one can compete with him. Right? So, but human beings appear to have these limitations. So that the unlimited likes to play in the limited position is something that's very interesting, arouses our curiosity, and is very sweet. As we're told, when gopis in the neighborhood complain about Krishna stealing butter, right? But one thing we'll point out, just as a sidebar, their complaints can be sung. They're songs that will liberate you. When the gopis assemble at Mother Yashoda's house and sing their complaints, it's Bande Nanda Brajastrinam Padarenum Abhikshnasa, Yashod Harikatod Gitam Punati Bhuvana Trayam. The whole world becomes purified by them complaining about Krishna. And what do they say? They're telling Yashoda how he sneaks into their houses and he's stealing yogurt. And so Yashoda suggests to them, why don't you leave some yogurt out? So you just leave some on the table and when he comes in, he can take that. And they say, no, it's not that he wants the yogurt so much. They go, then what is it? He likes stealing. Just if we put the yogurt not in it, he likes stealing it, your child. Right? Makanchor. He likes to steal. And so then we'll think, so you mean Bhoktaram yagya tapasam, ahangi sarva yagyanam bhokta cha prabhurevacha. Who owns everything, it makes sense. Who owns everything, including us, what does he like to do? Steal. Right? That gives some joy to him. Why? Because it's enhancing the pleasure on a certain level. In my childhood in Maryland, there were many farms. There were apple farms, and they used to have these signs that would say, like, no trespassing, $250 fine, and, trespassers can be shot. This is the South, and at the end of the 50s, early 60s. And there were all kinds of rumors of the kids about someone who got shot, but, the farmer came out with a shotgun, We'd sit there looking at the sign, looking at the fence, and figuring out how to do this. Then once we decided there's no turning back, then we climb over the fence, run over the tree, pull the apples down, climb back over the fence, and then go eat them. But now our hearts are pounding, we're laughing, we're ecstatic because of all the risk that was involved in getting those apples. We had apples at home on the kitchen table and a bowl. But these apples that we got by climbing over the fence, risking being shot, thrown in jail, whatever it was, we thought, oh, these taste sweeter than the ones at home. There's nothing like these apples, right? Oh yeah. How do you like them apples? So, Krishna is above consumer, heart eater, right? He likes the substance of the heart. That's why, I read an interesting thing today. Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, he's talking about separation from the gopis, but then he takes it to a very common thing about devotees, and he says, why, when we're chanting the holy name of Krishna, that Krishna doesn't reveal himself to us? He said, because Krishna wants the quality of our Krishna Nam to improve.
A very reasonable answer.
Yeah, he's like, good, but if I would reveal myself to you with that type, that wouldn't be good. So you could do more. I know your heart is capable of more, because the gopis, they're trying to figure out. They said, there's some people in this world, if you like them, they like you, you respect them, respect you. There's other people who don't really respect anybody or like anyone except themselves. And they describe different positions. They're saying, what kind of person are you? They're asking him. Just that you can do that, you can't do that in any other religion. You can't have that dialogue with God and ask him what kind of a person he is. Only, that's why Chakrabarti Thakur says, the braja budu ja kalpita. Aradhya bhagavan brajesha tanayas tadama brindavanam ramya kachit braja budu bargena ja kalpita. And Guru Maharaj translates this very beautifully, because kalpita can mean imagine. Imagination, it can also, he translates it as invention. He said, there is no superior form, way of worshiping God than what was invented by the Braja Gopis. It doesn't say their method of, it says kalpita, what they've imagined. There's nothing superior to their imagination. Some people will say art is all about imagination, so then you can say that. There's no superior art to the imagination of Krishna and the Braja Gopis. God also has an imagination. And the infinite can express himself, apparently, through the finite. So they want to know. So are you one of those people who doesn't care about it? Why are you treating us like this? And the same explanation comes: to increase the love and affection in your heart, to take it to a higher, a deeper level. because he's Bhavagrahi Janardana. That's the substance he's addicted to. He's addicted to devotion. Krishna is addicted to the love and affection in the hearts of his devotees. Ahang bhakta pradino hyasvan tantra ivadvija. Ninth canto, Ambarish. First canto he said, Swarat, he's independent. We were saying, oh, that means there's nothing you can do. But here he's saying, in the presence of devotion, it's as if I lose my independence. That's how powerful Sri Krishna Karshini Chasa devotion is. That Krishna becomes, in this sense, powerless in the presence of devotion. The supreme powerful becomes powerless, or becomes the plaything of the devotee. So the ladies of Vrindavan can say, Gopal, dance. Come on, dance. And Krishna starts dancing for their amusement. So everyone else is dancing under the influence of Maya. Right? And Krishna's dancing under the influence of the gopis.
So I guess...
So you have... There's only two choices you have. To be under the influence of Mahamaya or Yogamaya. You have to be under the influence of Maya. That's inescapable. So we have two choices before us. Mahamaya or Yogamaya. In Mahamaya, you forget who Krishna is. In Yogamaya, you forget who Krishna is. But, so if you're going to forget who Krishna is, better to do the Yogamaya way. Jnana Shunya Bhakti. Vaikuntha means without anxiety. That's the lower hemisphere of the spiritual world. Goloka, filled with anxiety. Full of anxiety. So the sooner we learn to accept anxiety in seva, then you can make a lot of progress in Krishna consciousness. But if we're looking for a position of no anxiety, Vaikuntha, you can go to Vaikuntha. But Das Goswami says, you'll be hurled down from, you want a peaceful life, free from anxiety, then you can't live in Goloka Vrindavan, where the gopis are thinking about how soft Krishna's lotus feet are, and then when they might step on a stone or a thorn or something, that's intolerable to them. And the only way they can think is that, like, they say, maybe in the madness of separation from us, you don't feel the pain? Could that be it?
Actually, what you've said, it's revealed in particular devotional literature and stories,
yes,
and sages. And again, yeah, to conclude our talk tonight, we were speaking about art, cinema,
yeah,
visual representation, literature, way to present all these things. So,
yes,
just conclude, where art has a place in all of it?
See, we know, even by just a secular study of art, the medium is almost irrelevant. What's important is the artist's concept. So one artist is a master of drawing and anatomically perfect. Another one is giving an impressionistic representation. Someone else is doing mixed media. Someone else is doing But what's really behind it all? Concept. That the artist has a concept, and they're using the medium for expression. So same thing. It's like Guru Maharaj saying, substance and form. If the substance is there, then it can use different forms for expression. But the all-critical point, is it that substance, or is it counterfeit substance? Is it imitation? So is it not the real thing? So that's the critical point. So as I told, by mentioning the Radha Raman deity, or the expression could be very simple, yet very profound and very divine. We've been to Devapoli, Nisringapoli, the deity there, who's, we're told that after killing Hiranyakashipu, right, and what is the place, Ahovalam, where Nisringadev washes his hands and they say the rocks are still red there, then he's going back to his own abode. When he's going over Bengal, he's saying, oh, this is where, as you know, Gauranga Mahaprabhu, so he's thinking, and all the devas are going with him. He's saying, let us give our dandavats. There's Mayapur, there's Navadeep, so wonderful. So in one place they call, why they call it Devapoli, it has different names. On hills, little mount, all the gods assembled, and with Nisringadev in the center, right? And Nisringadev worshiping Mahaprabhu, and we know, right? We're talking about Nitya Leela, the expansion and contraction of time and space. This is all in the eternal present. As Guru Maharaj says, evolution means gradual expression. See, the sun, it's already what it is in its position, but we see it appear to rise and gradually come up and fully express itself. So he's saying in a similar way, Krishna has infinite pastimes. He's in a particular position. They're gradually expressing themselves in different ways. So anyway, so here, Nisringadev, with all those gods, they assemble there. So later, and that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he's moved, relocated there, and he's, what do we hear? At 3 a.m., he's taking Krishna Nam, sitting on the stone bench on his house, having divine visions. He's supreme artist, having visions of reality, right? And what did the Gaudiya Math disciple Saraswati Thakur, who lived next door, he heard him, he said, his Krishna Nam was as if he was, he said, someone was crying out intensely to their beloved in the distance, feeling intense separation from them, pitifully crying out their name. He heard the Krishna Nam of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what do we hear? While in that divine state, they're interpreting everything in connection to divinity. They can trace everything back to the central conception of the Absolute. That science of auspicious signs and inauspicious signs that we sometimes apply in journeys, whatever, we're told by the Acharyas, Radharani, she's the source of those. But she's, all of the signs she's looking, are they favorable for Krishna connection? That's what, how she's interpreting them. So we like to quote Nietzsche saying, there are no facts, they're just interpretations. And that's what art is all about, subjective interpretation, expressed in the objective plane. Anyway, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur, what do we hear? Well, he's taking Krishna Nam, as described. A breeze is coming by from this direction, from Devapoli. At the time, Devapoli, and going towards Mayapur every day at like 4:30 a.m. approximately. And then he comes to understand Nisringadev is attending the arati, the Gaura arati of Mahaprabhu. And that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur's understanding is. So that deity there, when we go on the Navadvip Dham Parikrama, one day we stop there and that time of the year is very, there's so many pilgrims. So as the Indians do and with their, you know, they have family members that they've got to receive everybody. So at this one point, there is like a child there. The adults maybe were resting or whatever and couldn't do crowd control. And I was there with the other members of our mat. Somehow we got pressed to like into the deity room until we were like at the feet of the deity, I mean like this. And although I had the darshan of the deity before, and we're told that after Nrisimhadev left and the devas left, there was a kund there, and in the Satyayuga, one Brahmin bathing found this self-manifested deity of Nrisimhadev, installed the worship, and you see, but in time, the face is removed. It's hard to see all the details after all the abhishekhs of for millions of years, that some of the external characteristics have worn away, but nothing, not an atom less on the subjective plane. Right? So anyway, being pressed like this to the lotus feet of the deity, I saw that he's sitting with one foot down, and beneath his foot, in the prayer position, is this little Prahlad Maharaj. So it's Nrisimha and Prahlad. If you look, you'll see Prahlad Maharaj is under his lotus foot in a pranam with like this. So Krishna chose to appear that way, and it may contradict what might be perceived as objectively pleasing or artistic, but it's sort of supreme artistry of divine expression.
Well, that's why highest art is most difficult to understand, because it's not under rules of mundane proportion.
Yeah, rag, ragamarg, spontaneous expression.
Okay, that was very deep conversation today. Tomorrow, there's much more questions came out from that.
But I like seeing the children in India dress up as Shiva on Shivratri. So I saw some in Dum Dum Park once, and they all had like little din din drums and tree shoes, the pitchfork, and they're like dancing madly and like, I'm destroying the universe. No, I am. You know, they're like. But the pure Bengali, just to show you what they're like. So they also do Rath Yatra, like Prabhupada did when he was a kid. So you'll see, they pull a little chariot of Jagannath to the deities in Dum Dum Park, Guru Gauranga Radha Madan Mohanju, and then go around the deity, and then they go back home, like the mother's in the back, and you know. And so one little girl is pulling a cart, and I, you know, I'm trying to encourage. I go, "Oh, Jai Jagannath," and you know, and she's, yeah. And then she's like, "Wait," and like stop the cart, and on the back she pulled a little curtain, and like pulled out some prasad, gave me some prasad, you know. But the pure Bengalis, the rickshaw wallahs' children around the corner, they had Rath Yatra carts. But they didn't have Jagannath on their card. They had Ma Kali. They're pulling her. So what are their divine pastimes and way of seeing? Oh, and this I wanted to say, and the final thing about art, and we can talk about it another time. There's something called kitsch, which you may know, maybe everyone doesn't, but in its most simple expression, it means like poor taste. Like someone thinks something, look, and other people go, "Oh, you know, that looks so phony or poor taste." Generally, but what I've seen in India, it goes so far beyond kitsch. And the people, when they're trying to offer something, their deities might be plastic, LED lights, whatever it is. Sometimes they do this in such a pure, simple-hearted, charming way, you can't help but worship that principle. They're beyond understanding these things are just cheap little pieces of plastic. It has some meaning to them, and from their hearts, they're trying to express something, some sentiments, and there's some value there. It's naive, it's less than naive, it's so simple. but it's not offensive or kitsch in the sense of poor taste. It's almost like simple-hearted, pure simple-hearted expression manifests through just very, very simple things. That's also possible. Just like the children with the cart, there's some beauty to that. Srila Prabhupada, he observed Rath Yatra as a child and would organize a little festival, have the cart, someone banging a gong, someone doing, you know, Prabhupada's an organizer. So even as a child, he's got a group. All right, you'll be playing the gong, you'll be distributing prasadam, you pull the cart, you're the pujari. So, and when it's mentioned, I'll just conclude with this. When the praise of Uddhava is given in the Bhagavatam in the third canto, saying, what kind of child was he? He's so in love with Krishna and always thinking and absorbed in Krishna. When his mother would call him to eat, he wouldn't hear her and he wouldn't answer. Because even in his childhood play was centered on Krishna. So what sort of, you know, divine imagination? That's what Chakrabarti Thakur is saying. And that's the point I want to conclude. He's saying the imagination of Krishna in the hearts of his real devotees, that is supreme, and nothing compares with that. And we can say that's the highest form of artistic expression. What comes from the hearts, the Krishna conception that manifests from the hearts of devotees. So just to conclude, that near our Mat in Vrindavan, you know, there's so many famous deities in Vrindavan. Next, Radha Damodar, Madan Mohan, Govindaji, Radha Raman, so many. But then there's Radha Shama Sundar. And they put a banner, you know, there's like, on some level, competitiveness, like why you should go to their temple. And they had a banner across the road and it said, the only deity to manifest from the heart of Srimati Radharani.
Like,
you know, like, that should at least get you in the door to the darshan. You
know?
Right. So, you know, there's their Krishna. Radharani and Brajagopis, when they go to Kurukshetra, it's not their Krishna. They only want their Krishna. Shama Gopurup, where no flute? What kind of Krishna is this? An imposter. Krishna without a flute, is this a joke? It's not, it would be a joke if it wasn't sad. No flute, no Jamuna, dressed like a king. They're not, it's crippling the sentiments of their heart. So that Guru Maharaj said, when asked, Radharani, she assembles the gopis, they do rasa dance at the request of the queens, and they're all like, oh, that was extraordinary. And Guru Maharaj said, Radharani said, that was nothing. You should see the original.
That's the only truth about art.
Right, she's saying,
once you know what's the reason.
Yeah, what was this? We just threw something together, you know, for you all to see, but the original is something quite extraordinary.
We can chant.
Hare Krishna.